The original air date was the 9th of January, 1956. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Orrin Vance.
Orrin Vance?
Yeah, you sent me up to Austin, Inc. 7 years ago, you remember?
Oh, yes, I think I do.
You know, I thought a lot about coming out and killing you, Dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I'm going to do you a favor.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think maybe you and I can work out something.
You know, this sounds like double talk to me.
Don't you give me any routine, Dollar. I heard them all. I'm calling you with information about the Todd case.
Todd? I don't remember.
Well, look it up. It cost your company $75,000.
Hey. Hello? Vance?
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly... Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Four State Insurance Company, Wilmington, Delaware. Attention, Mr. Don Free, Chief Investigator, Claims Division. Since your office authorized me to conduct certain inquiries based on new information supplied by Orrin Vance, I am billing you accordingly. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Todd matter. Expense account item one, $1.85. One phone call to Don Freed in Wilmington, Delaware, to discuss the burglary that had occurred 6 months before in the Long Island home of Norman Todd. The case was a complete stalemate. The police and the insurance investigators had been unable to locate the thieves or trace any of the loot, which included jewelry, silver, and wearing apparel that had been taken from the residence. I requested Don to forward whatever details they had, along with an accurate list of the stolen items and complete descriptions. Expense account item two, $2, cab fare. To and from the Office of International Adjustment Bureau, where I refresh my memory concerning Orrin Vance. A good look at the files, and I remembered him well. Back in 1947, he'd been involved in a well-engineered swindle of the Seaman Clothing Company. Almost got away with it. And it was my investigation and testimony that finally put him behind the bars.
Hi.
Huh? Vance?
Yeah. Oh, hello, Dollar. You haven't changed a bit.
You have.
Yeah, sure I have. You took 7 years of my life away from me. Did you do what I told you to on the phone?
People like you don't tell me what to do, Vance. Come on in.
Oh, sure. Thanks. Nice place you got here.
Yeah, I like it. Sit down. Tell me what's on your mind.
Look, Dollar, don't treat me like a con, huh? Even if I am one. I'll sit down, yeah. I'll have a smoke with you. I'll talk with you.
Okay. Okay, have one.
Thanks. It's just that everybody's doing it. Treating me like that. Even my wife. Went over to see her the first day I got out. You know what? She wouldn't let me in the house. She gave me $40 and told me to go out and get a decent job. Work hard, she said, and in 6 months, if everything is okay and you're not in any trouble, you can come home to me and the kids. And if not, she says, I'm going to divorce you.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you want me to say?
Offer me a seat. Invite me to sit down. I'm a human being, too.
Sure.
Thanks again.
Well?
Well, I thought about it a lot. You know, if you hadn't been out to get me 8 years ago, I might have had you over to dinner. Maybe we could have been friends.
Yeah, maybe. Now, what's this all about, Vance?
Okay. I can't get a job. I'll have to go in business for myself. I need a stake. That's why I called you.
Go on.
Now, did you do like I asked you to? Look up the Todd case?
I call Wilmington about it. There's nothing new happening.
I'm happening. That's something new. And I can help. For a price.
All right, go on.
But I want my name out of the picture. Could you fix that?
Probably. But I'd have to talk to the police sooner or later.
All I'm asking is your promise to keep my name out of it. Otherwise, it's no go.
Well, tell me something about it before I make any promises, Vance.
Fair enough. You got a list of the stolen items?
Not yet. Won't be here until tomorrow.
Now, when it gets here, you'll find it was a mink coat in that lot. I think most of it was jewelry, but it was a mink coat, labeled from Zellerbach Furs in New York. And the inside lining carried this serial number, 27356.
All right. Take it easy, Vance. Expense account item 3, $2.50. Another long-distance phone call to Wilmington and Don Freed, who verified that the serial numbers furnished by Orrin Vance fitted those in the stolen mink coat. I explained how I'd come about the information at hand, leaving out any mention of names. Freed talked with his boss and phoned me back a half an hour later.
You can go ahead and work on it, Dollar. There's a $5,000 reward posted.
$5,000?
We'll split it between you and your friend, if anything worthwhile turns up. Okay?
Suppose it's nothing.
Okay. Swindle sheet two.
All right. Okay, Vance. You're in business.
How does it work?
You tell me where the coat is and who has it, and I'll handle it from there. If it turns out to be anything, you'll get paid for it. All I've had so far is talk.
I'll tell you where the coat is and who has it. But before I do that, you give me a check.
What?
A check for $2,500. You date it 2 days from now. That'll give you a chance to look into it and see if I know what I'm talking about. And you can stop payment any time within 2 days if my tip doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I'll have the check and bye-bye.
Where to?
Homewood, Indiana. My plane leaves in an hour.
I may want you around for some questions.
No, I'll give you the tip. That's all. You ask somebody else the questions. Well?
Okay. What's the matter? You afraid?
Sure. Haven't you noticed? I'm a stool pigeon.
I noticed, and it worried me. But I arranged for him to have the post-dated check in return, for which he gave me a name and an address. Gloria Tierney, 1231 East 57th Street, New York City. Expense account item 4, $3, cab fare to the airport. I saw Orrin Vance off on a westbound plane to Indiana. 45 minutes later, I boarded Flight 37 for New York. Expense account item 5, $18.85. The cost of getting me from Hartford to New York. I checked in at the New Western and went directly to the Metropolitan Police Station, where I asked if Gloria Tierney had a record. A check in the police files revealed that she was not listed. About 7 o'clock, I had a bite to eat, and then I walked over to the 57th Street address, a small apartment building.
Yes?
Hello. I'm looking for Gloria Tierney.
Oh, you have the wrong apartments right across the hall.
I was over there. No one answered.
Well, she must be out. I'm the manager here. Would you like to leave your name?
I'm Johnny Dollar. But I wonder if you could tell me where to find her.
No, I can't, but I'll be glad to give her your name and ask her to call you.
Well, that sounds fair enough. I'm at the New Western Hotel.
Oh? You're from out of town?
Yes.
An old friend of Gloria's?
No, I'm just on business.
Well, I'll tell her you came by.
Good, fine. By the way, how long has Miss Tierney lived here?
About a year. Why?
Oh, I just wondered, thank you.
Johnny Dollar, New Western Hotel?
Uh-huh, that's right. Wait a minute. Here, take my card.
Insurance?
Sort of. The apartment house manager, it said Ethel Stromberg on the mailbox, smiled politely and closed the door. I went outside the building and took a plant across the street. I waited around for about 3 hours and saw no one go in or out of the building. I went back to my hotel. About midnight, the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Hello, Mr. Dollar, please.
Hi, Mr. Dollar.
You left word for me. I'm Gloria Tierney.
Oh, yes, Miss Tierney.
I intend to leave town, possibly in the morning, so I thought I'd better call you tonight. I hope it isn't too late.
Not at all, Miss Tierney.
What's it all about, Mr. Dollar?
I'm an insurance investigator. I'd rather tell you about it in person.
As I said, I expect to leave town tomorrow. Is it important?
I think so, yes. Could I see you tonight?
I don't know.
I could be there in 15 minutes.
I don't understand.
I'll come right over.
Well, All right.
I was there in less than 15 minutes, but things weren't all right. As a matter of fact, things looked all wrong. Gloria Tierney's apartment was darkened. She didn't answer when I knocked on the door. I tried it. The door was locked.
Yoo-hoo.
Hmm?
Now, look here. I don't think you have any right to bother Gloria. Oh, it's you.
Hello, Mrs. Stromberg.
Well, where's Gloria?
I don't know.
You don't know? She was waiting to meet you.
Huh?
Well, out here in the hallway. She came in tonight, and I gave her your message. And then she went in and called you, and then came back out and said you were coming by.
Yeah, well, she's gone.
Well, that's funny.
Hey, tell me, did you hear anyone out here?
No. Well, maybe she went down to the drugstore.
Drugstore's closed.
Oh, yes.
She'll probably show up.
Yes, probably.
You look worried, Mrs. Stromberg.
I am. Gloria didn't seem like herself when she came in.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, she was nervous and upset. I think she'd been crying. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I hope she's all right.
Yeah, so do I.
You're sure she isn't outside waiting for you?
No, I didn't see any. Well, I'll look again.
Do you see her?
Not a soul. Had she been drinking?
No, of course not.
What was she wearing, Mrs. Stromberg?
Oh, she had her coat on.
Her mink coat?
Yes. Well, how'd you know about her mink coat?
A friend of mine. I'll take a look around out here.
All right. Oh, wait a minute. I'll come with you. You know, of course, she might have got...
Wait a second. Look, is that Gloria?
Why, yes, I think so.
Something's wrong with her.
Yes.
The girl crossing the street in the mink coat weaves slightly from side to side. As I got close to her, I could see she was a pretty girl in her late 20s, blonde hair, dark eyes. She hardly looked up as I came up to her, just stopped and stood there, weaving slightly. Miss Tierney?
Yes.
Well, can I help you? I'm Johnny Dollar.
Please.
Well, come on. We better go inside.
Yes.
What is it?
He struck me.
He what?
He struck me. And I... Oh, Mr. Dollar.
Here, come on. Careful now.
Sure. Oh.
Easy. Easy now.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You okay?
Yes. Look out! That car!
What?
That car! No!
All three slugs had hit her and she fell back into my arms. By the time I could reach for it and get my gun out, the black Cadillac and whoever was driving it were out of sight around the corner. And there'd been no light on the rear license plate.
Oh.
Easy now, easy.
Mr. Dollar, those were shots. Mr. Dollar.
Call the police, quick.
But I... Yes, right away.
You know, let's see if we can...
Mr. Dollar.
Don't try to talk, Gloria. Don't try to move. We'll have help here in a minute.
There'll be another intriguing episode in our story of the Todd matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, the same old business of murder, but with a brand new twist. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule one, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George, Digital Henry, for that gun safety PSA. All right, we heard episode 303 of Johnny Dollar in the first quarter of the show today. That had an original air date of the 9th of January, 1956. It stars Bill Bailey, I believe. There was many... Bob Bailey. Had a few different guys play the roles over the years. Interesting note, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, was, what I understand, was the last radio drama on the airwaves, concluding in 1962. Up next, we have episode 30 of a fan favorite era on the Grand Hour, The Six Shooter. This is Crisis at Easter Creek. And that had an original air date of the 15th of April, 1954. This is Arthur. You listen to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Thanks for listening.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with the Bob Hope Show, the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Attended a Tuesday evening choir practice in quite a spell, but when Reverend Broom stopped by the Tropical Ranch where I was working and asked me if I could manage to take part in this week's rehearsal, well, I sure couldn't see how to do any harm, so I... Ringing in the sheaves, we shall come rejoicing. Ringing in the sheaves. Anyhow, there we are. About 10 of us all gathered around at John Farley's general store, it was. You see, the town of Easter Creek didn't have a regular church building yet. They held their services and social affairs in the mercantile while they went ahead trying to raise money to put up a community church. It was during the second verse of Bringing in the Sheaves that things started sounding a little peculiar, sort of like the voices and the music were sort of traveling different trails. First, I thought it was me. I never have been exactly what you'd call melodious, but then the other folks were beginning to have their troubles, too. And holy smokes, it just was getting terrible. And finally, Mrs. Peebles, she was the organist, she just threw up her hands and stopped even trying to play.
Can't.
No, no, Elvira.
Heaven knows I've tried. I've done my best. But this organ just won't play anymore.
Well, we'll have Mr. Farley take another look at it, Elvira. I'm sure he'll be able to get it back into shape.
There's nothing Mr. Farley can do. Or anybody else. It's plain wore out. You can't expect a thing to last forever.
Oh, no, no, of course
Seems
not.
Seems to me that after all this time, something could have been done about buying a new organ. When I donated this one to the congregation, I didn't suppose I'd have to go on playing it all the rest of my life.
Oh, no.
But apparently that's what's expected.
No, no, there's no need to upset yourself, Elvira.
Well, I can't help being upset. I say I can't help it. How do you think I feel every Sunday? All those sour notes, and that wheezing and whining. Folks are beginning to think that it's me, that it's my plan.
Oh, no.
Well, I've been humiliated for the last time, and I won't go through it again.
No, but Elvira, we gotta have music for Easter service.
Music? Well, you certainly don't call that music, do you? Good night, Reverend Bruce.
Oh, somebody get back.
Oh, no. All right, everybody. Give me your attention, please. Attention, folks. Quiet down now, please. Quiet down. It appears that matters have come to a serious crisis. It's bad enough for a town by the name of Easter Creek not to have a proper building for Easter services. But to be without an organ and an organist. Well, it's a disgrace, a positive disgrace. Now, we mustn't blame Miss Peebles. That instrument has seen its best days, there's no doubt about it. So I propose that we take immediate steps to purchase a replacement.
Just one thing, Reverend Broome.
Yes, Sheriff.
Where's the money coming from?
Well, now, I've given that matter serious thought, Sheriff Appleton, and there seems to be only one possible solution to the problem. We'll just have to borrow from the building fund.
Sort of like robbing Peter to pay Paul, isn't it?
No, not exactly, not exactly. Seeing as how we haven't reached our $1,000 goal anyway, well, the money's just sort of lying there.
I don't know about that.
Just how much do you figure a new organ will cost, Reverend Bruce?
Well, I've done some investigating in the field, Mrs. Appleton. Last month, when Elvira's foot went through the pump pedal, it seemed like the situation was coming to head. The church over to Whitefield purchased a new organ just last Christmas, and they're willing to sell us their old one. It's used, of course, but it's still in excellent repair. And they're only asking
$95. No. I'm afraid that's a bit more than we can afford, Reverend.
Well, we must have at least $95 in the building fund. We've been putting money aside for the last year.
No, we ain't. We got $42.50. That's the total. Up to and including $3.65 from the cake bazaar a month ago.
$42.50?
Yep.
Oh, I just had no idea I was...
We're shy over $50 from what it would take to buy the organ. And there just isn't any way we could raise it. Not between now and Easter.
Now. We mustn't give up. After all, we only need $50.
$52.50.
Yes, exactly. Let's see. There was just someone who could take a firm grip of the situation. A man who... Mr. Ponson.
Yes, Reverend.
Mr. Ponson, I know you aren't a regular member of our congregation, and you've only been in our midst a few months. But...
Well, I sure be glad to donate what I can to the cause, Reverend, but I'm afraid it'll only be a drop in the bucket.
Oh, a donation wasn't exactly what I had in mind.
Oh?
I think perhaps you can be of more service in another fashion. Ladies and gentlemen, I propose that we appoint Britt Ponson, a committee of one, to take charge of the organ raising.
Oh, now, hold on a minute here, Reverend Broome.
We all know that you're a man of strength and determination, Mr. Ponson, that you inspire confidence, and we trust generosity.
Well, now, I'd sure like to oblige you folks, but what you're asking is just out of the question, that's all.
You wouldn't turn us down in our hour of need.
Oh, no, I'm not turning you down exactly. What I mean is, it just couldn't be done. Why, you've been a whole year raising $42.50, and now you're talking about raising over $50 in just a few days.
Well, we've been going at it the wrong way, Mr. Potson.
What?
I'm sure your approach will be 100% more effective.
My approach?
Why, certainly. And just to show you how easy it'll be, we'll start things off by taking up a collection right now. Sheriff Appleton, will you pass the hat?
But,
all right, everybody. Dig down deep. It's a wonderful thing Mr. Ponsett's doing in taking over this fundraising campaign.
But I never said
and
a word.
And here's our chance to let him know how
Reverend,
much we appreciate it.
Reverend.
The sheriff finished passing the hat and poured it out on the table. And Reverend Broom counted it. $2.50. And yet the Reverend was real pleased, too. He said that that meant that I only had $50 to go. A nice round number. Well, not that I had any intention of taking this job of raising the money to get the new organ, you understand. I told the Reverend I couldn't do it. I told him just as plain as day that I couldn't do it, but somehow he got the idea that I had already agreed to do it, and no matter how hard I talked, he just kept... And the other folks, they were as bad as Reverend Broom. I was just outnumbered. That's all there was to it. So, early the next morning, I took my hat in my hand and started out. Must have been getting around noon when I finally came back to the sheriff's office.
Oh, come in, Bet. Come in.
Morning, Abner.
Oh, well, how's everything going? You been out collecting?
Yeah, I've been collecting.
Well?
Well, $11. That's what I got so far.
$11, huh? Remarkable, Bet. Simply remarkable.
But the trouble is, I've already asked everybody in town.
Uh-huh.
Except you, that is.
Oh, well, I suppose I could give you a dollar, but don't forget I was in on the collection at choir practice. You ain't serious, Brett. You don't mean you really ask everybody else.
As a matter of fact, there is one area I sort of skipped over.
Oh?
Well, those cabins over east of the creek and the ranches out that way. I haven't visited them yet.
Well, you'd just be wasting your time if you did.
I would, eh?
Yeah, those folks wouldn't be very anxious to help out a church. Mess of thieves, cattle rustlers, every other kind of riffraff.
Oh, is that what they are? Oh.
Oh, well, now, that's just a general sense of opinion. And of course, if I could know for certain that we had any actual outlaws living around Easter Creek, if I was positive, that is, well, it'd be my duty to arrest them.
I see, uh-huh.
But the fact is, they ain't caused any trouble here in town, none of them. Now, I can't go around arresting people on rumors. Well, can I, Britt?
Hmm. I understand Red Eye Kirk has a place somewhere east of town. Is that right?
That's hearsay, Britt. Pure and simple hearsay.
Oh, I see.
Why, you don't think I'd let a notorious gunfighter like Red Eye live right here under my nose, do you?
Well, it's... too bad he's not in these parts.
Oh?
No, I was thinking I might like to pay him a little visit.
Well, what on earth for?
Well, as long as he's not in the neighborhood, I guess it doesn't matter. Kind of a shame, though.
Well, now, if you're really anxious to... what I mean is... but they do say there's a fellow who somewhat resembles Red Eye. He's got himself a cabin just this side of Deer Mountain.
Just this side of Deer Mountain, huh?
Wait a minute, Red. Wait a minute. What in Sunday do you want to get mixed up with Red Eye Kirk for? What's he got to do with raising money for a new organ?
Well, he probably won't have anything to do with it, but it's just that I don't want to leave any stones unturned, you see. So long, Abner. It was about a half hour's ride out to the cabin Sheriff Applin told me about. Not much of a cabin, though. Just a shack at the foot of Deer Mountain with a corral off one side. There sure were a lot of different brands on the horses in that corral. Well, I pulled up in the yard about 15 feet from the cabin door. Whoa, for a minute, it didn't seem like there was anybody at home, but... and then I heard the door start to creak open. The barrel of a .45 poked into sight. The man behind it was tall, square-shouldered, and thick black beard, and kind of reddish eyes. Howdy.
What do you want, mister?
I'm looking for Red Eye Kirk.
Ain't nobody here by that name.
Uh-huh. So maybe you'll do, then.
What?
My name's Ponsett, Brett Ponsett.
Ponsett?
Now, hold on. I'll just take it easy with that gun.
Get him up. Get him up high.
Oh, sure. How's this?
You alone?
Yep, not alone.
You must be plumb crazy thinking you can take me single-handed.
No, I'm not interested in taking you, Red Eye.
I told you that ain't who I am.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yes, you did. Yes, that's right. You mind if I get off my horse?
Well, just don't try nothing, that's all. And don't move toward your holster.
Don't worry.
That's close enough.
Sure.
Now, what are you doing out here, anyway?
Well, the fact is, you see, what'd you say your name was?
Jones. Bill Jones.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Jones, I've been given the job of raising some money.
What?
Now, don't get me wrong. It was my idea, but since it was for such a good cause, I just couldn't turn the folks down.
Good cause?
A new church organ. That's what I'm collecting for.
What?
You see, the one that Reverend Broom's congregation has been using, it sort of gave up the ghost last night. And what with Easter coming on,
joshing me, mister?
No, of course I'm not.
You mean you're out here trying to raise money so you can buy a church organ?
That's right.
Go on. Get moving before I take a shot at you.
You won't give me a hand, huh?
I wouldn't give you 5 cents for every church organ west of the Mississippi River.
Now, it wasn't your money I wanted.
What?
No. No, it wasn't that at all.
What the devil did you come around bothering me for?
Well, I was thinking that you're a pretty influential man with some of the folks hereabouts.
Yeah, they've told the mark if I tell them to. You can bet on that.
Yeah, well, that's just the impression I got.
So what?
Well, it seemed to me that if I was to go moseying around these parts alone, some of your friends might not look too kindly on the idea of giving me donations.
They sure wouldn't.
But on the other hand, if we were to approach them together as a kind of a team, you might say.
A team?
That's the general idea, yeah.
You want me to go along with you?
I sure would appreciate it if you would.
And help you raise money for a church organ?
That's right.
Well, I'll be... Me taking up a Sunday school collection. Well, that's the doggonedest notion anybody ever had. What do the boys think, huh? Jack Denton, Wisconsin Billy? Why, it'd be almost worth it just to see their faces. You sure got a sense of humor, Potson. And you know something, this here crazy scheme of yours, I'm going to take you up on it.
You know something, Mr. Jones?
What?
You know something? I kind of thought you would.
You are listening to The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman whose name has become a legend throughout the great Southwest. And now, Act Two of the story called Crisis at Easter Creek.
Well, the first place we came to was a farmhouse about a quarter of a mile south of Red Eye's cabin. At least it had been a farmhouse once. There sure wasn't any crops growing in the vicinity now. The porch sagged off at a slant, and the windows were stuffed full of papers and rags. Even the front door looked like it was about to slide off its hinges. The place really looked deserted, but Red Eye gave me the nod, and we pulled up and dismounted. Old Red Eye, he had a great big grin as wide as a full moon spread all over his face. Been there ever since we started off.
Hey, Denton! Get out here, Denton! It's me, Red Eye!
Well, I guess you knowed who I was anyway, didn't you?
Well, I had a pretty good idea.
Howdy, Red Eye. What can I do for you?
Denton, this here's Britt Ponsett.
Ponsett?
Howdy, Denton.
Now, don't you worry, Red Eye. Even if he did get the draw on you, he ain't turning you over to no sheriff.
Oh, put your gun away, Denton.
Huh?
Use your eyes. Ponsett ain't covered me, is he?
Then, what are you doing riding along with him?
Well, we got us a little project. You explain it to him, Bunsen.
Well, the fact is, we're collecting money to buy a new organ for Reverend Broome.
What?
That's right, Jack.
Oh, sounds to me like you said money for a new organ. I must be getting loco.
I sure ain't going to argue that with you, Denton. Well, come on. Come on, fork over.
You mean you're serious, Red Eye?
Of course I'm serious.
And he must be holding a gun on you.
I ain't got all day, Denton. How much we need, Britt?
Well, let's see, 12 from 50, $38.
Well, you heard him. Denton?
Sure. Just let me look in my purse here. Two $20 gold pieces. How's that?
Well, I didn't mean that you had to contribute the whole thing.
Just keep the change.
Oh, well, thanks a lot.
My pleasure entirely. Was there anything else, Red Eye?
No, I guess that'll do it for now. Let's go, Ponzo.
Yeah, sure. Easy, boy.
I'm glad you boys stopped by. Anytime I can... Well, you know where to find me.
Now, we'll stop at Mike Morgan's place next. That's just down the road.
Well, that's mighty considerate of you, Red Eye, but we don't need to make another stop.
What? Well, what are you talking about?
Well, $38, that's all we needed, you see.
Oh.
See, the organ's all paid for now.
Well, there must be something else the Reverend needs money for, ain't it?
Oh, I suppose.
Oh, doggone it, Ponson. I'm enjoying myself. And besides, it wouldn't be fair to the rest of the boys if Denton was the only one who got a chance to do a little contributing to charity. The least we can do is stop at Mike Morgan's, since how we're so close.
I said, well, whatever you say. Whatever you say, Red Eye. Well, we made about 8 more stops before evening, and I must say that all of Red Eye's friends are mighty generous. I even had to turn down the offer of a couple of cows for the cause, seeing as how there was some doubt as to the legal owner of the stock in question. But the gold and the silver and the paper money, well, there wasn't any way of telling how that was come by. At least, wasn't any way I could think of. So by sundown, I was carrying quite a load of cash. And we were riding away from Slick Wilson's place when Red Eye gave a little sigh and looked at me sort of disappointed.
Well, guess I better head back home now.
Sure, Red Eye, sure. What's the matter?
I was just thinking about how Mike Morgan tripped over his shotgun when I told him what it was we wanted.
Nearly
blowed himself right over the bar.
Yeah, it's kind of a close call, wasn't it?
Doggone it, I don't see why Wisconsin Billy wasn't at home. Well, he'd have been fit to be tied.
Well, we did all right about him, you know. Easy.
Say, it's a Brit. Oh, why don't you come back tomorrow, huh?
Oh, no.
He'd probably be around there.
Oh, no. No, thanks, Red Eye. I got a whole lot more than I ever expected. And I sure do appreciate your assistance.
Oh, pleasure's all mine. Well, good luck.
Same to you, Red Eye. It was about an hour's ride back to town, but before I'd gone more than halfway, I got the feeling there was somebody following me. I sure didn't like it either. Not with all this money I had in the saddlebags. So I gave Scar a little touch of the spur. Come on, boy. Come on, let's go. When I heard the other horse pounding up the trail after me, let's go, boy. Come on, let's go. His first shot was over my head. There wasn't any point in trying to outrun him, Scar being as tired as he was. So I slid out of the saddle and I rolled over behind a rock. He was still coming, so I eased my gun out of the holster and inched up to get a look at him. He was a big fella, holding his revolver loose in his hand like he didn't figure on using it. Well, I didn't figure on letting him rob me either. I waited until he was about even with the rock where I was hiding. Then I stood up.
Drop it! Drop it! Okay, take it easy, Ponset.
Why, you know who I am, huh?
Red Eye told me you was heading this way. I've been trying to catch up with you for the last 15 minutes.
You...
You mean Red Eye sent you after me?
I'll say he did.
Well, I'll be darned. I thought I had him figured different. Now, I suppose he told you about the money, too.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Here's mine.
Hmm?
My share. Captain.
What? Your share?
Plymouth Church organ. Name's Wisconsin Billy. I was out when you come by to collect this afternoon.
Oh. Oh.
Then I wanted to make certain you got my donation.
Oh. Oh, I see.
How do you mind handing me my gun?
You got it? No, not a bit. Here you are.
Thanks. Well, so long, Ponset.
Oh, yes, so long, there.
I simply can't believe it, Mr. Ponset. There must be over $1,000 here.
Just about, Reverend. Just about.
Enough for the organ. Enough to build a church, too.
Yeah. Well.
Mr. Ponset.
Yeah?
Now, you mustn't think me ungrateful, but I'm afraid we can't accept this money.
What?
Well, you see, Sheriff Appleton told me where you got it.
He did, huh?
Now, mind you, I don't have any objections myself. I think when help is offered, it should be accepted, irregardless of the source. But some of my people, they aren't quite so broad-minded. And the idea of permitting Red Eye Kirk and those other outlaws to donate to our fund, well...
Now, just hold on a minute, Reverend Brougham. Now, just hold on. Now, when I was talking to Sheriff Appleton earlier today, he claimed that there weren't any outlaws in the vicinity of Easter Creek.
Well, we don't like to admit that our town is a haven.
The sheriff said that if there were any bandits around here, it was his duty to arrest them. Of course, that would mean getting a posse together. It would probably mean a lot of shooting and killing.
Well, Mr. Ponson, everybody knows it. I mean, it's common knowledge.
And as for Red Eye Kirk ever having anything to do with that money I raised, well, you could be mistaken, Reverend.
But you were seen riding along. Well, it looked like Red Eye.
Didn't Sheriff Applin ever tell you about the fellow that lives out near Deer Mountain who's supposed to be the spitting image of Red Eye Kirk? Didn't he ever tell you about
it? Now, Mr. Ponson.
No, even if some of those fellows on the other side of the creek are sort of outside the law. Now, I'm not saying they are, mind you, but even so, you know, accusing them of being criminals, it might stir up a whole lot of trouble.
Well, that's true, of course.
And besides, Sheriff Applin says they're law-abiding citizens, and he's your duly elected sheriff. He sure ought to know. Hmm? Well, night, Reverend. I'll see you in church. Well, I guess there was a little argument about whether or not to accept the money, but Sheriff Appleton finally convinced folks that they didn't have any right to turn it down. So, by the following Sunday, Easter, the congregation had a new organ. And the service was real well attended, too. Now, some of the folks didn't look like regular churchgoers. But Red Eye, Mr. Jones, he explained to me afterwards that he and his friends just wanted to make sure their contributions had been put to a good use. I don't know if they've been back since, but you never can tell, you know. Reverend Broom preached a real fine sermon that morning.
That was episode 29 of The Six Shooter. I had it as 30. However, that's considering the audition program. Crisis at Easter Creek, an original air date of the 15th of April, 1954. Again, that was directed by Jack Johnstone. Actually, stars Jimmy Stewart. Can't deny his voice. I'm going to go ahead and conclude the show today with episode 2 of The Todd Case. But yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is starring Bob Bailey, directed by Jack Johnstone. This one had an original air date of the 10th of January, 1956. These were quarter-hour dailies. Look, I can explain more about yours truly, Johnny Dollar, next week when I conclude The Todd Case. This is Arthur, The Grand Hour. Thanks for listening. Here on 91.5 WMFO, Medford.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Dan Mapes, New York Police Department, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, hi.
I just went over your statement to the officers who went to the scene of the shooting. Pretty rough business.
Yeah. How's the girl?
She hasn't regained consciousness. We've got to get on with this, Dollar. There's some questions I want to ask you.
Sure. Glad to do what I can. Where can I meet you?
What's the matter with right here at headquarters?
Okay. Say in about an hour?
Make it a half an hour. I said I want to get on with the case. Room 212, Sergeant Daniel Mapes.
Okay, Sergeant, I'll be there.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Four State Insurance Company, Wilmington, Delaware. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Todd matter. A burglary that occurred 6 months ago, but the murder try occurred only a few hours ago. Expense account item 6, $16.40, one telegram. From me to Chief Investigator Don Freed, Four State Insurance. I explained events up to date and requested that Freed contact their New York office and employ counsel for me in the event the New York police chose to hold me as a material witness in the shooting of Gloria Tierney.
Ah, we aren't going to hold you. Why should we?
I don't know. Why should you?
Sit down. Take it easy.
Okay, thanks.
So, you're a freelance insurance investigator.
Yeah, that's right.
Working for Four State out of Wilmington, huh?
That's right.
Okay, suppose you give it to me.
Well, you got it right in front of you there in that report. I told it to the investigating officers right after the shooting last night.
Now you tell it to me.
All right. I made an appointment to meet this girl. She called me about 12 o'clock midnight, and I went on over to her apartment. She wasn't around when I got there, so I waited and talked to her landlady. A few minutes later, I saw her coming across the street. I went over to meet her because she looked like she'd been hurt or something. I walked her back across the street. Somebody pulled up in a car just as we got to the curb.
Says here, Black Caddy, 1955 Coupe de Ville.
Yeah, I didn't pay too much attention.
What was the license number?
Couldn't tell. It was blacked out.
Okay, go on.
There was a man in it. I didn't see his face. Didn't even notice him, really. He just started shooting. The girl was hit 3 times. I was trying to help her, and he got away.
Well, what else?
That's it.
Okay. Tell me why you were in here yesterday afternoon checking to see if this Gloria Tierney had a record.
I was about to contact her. I wanted to know if she'd ever been in trouble.
Now tell me what you're working on.
The Todd case.
Todd?
Yeah, burglary out in Long Island about 6-7 months ago. I had reason to believe the girl might be able to help me on it.
Because of what?
Because of her mink coat.
Well, I'm glad you answered that way, Dollar. The coat's in the lab now. They're looking it over. We found it listed in our stolen property files. So far, your story is okay, but believe me, it isn't over yet.
Huh?
Tell me more. We know about the coat. We want to know about the girl who was wearing it.
Sorry, I can't help you.
We didn't have her prints on file here, but we sent them off to Washington. She's still unconscious. She's in pretty bad shape. She can't talk. You can. What's her angle?
I don't know.
You don't know who shot her. You didn't get the license number. You just stood there and let it happen. All you were interested in was your mink coat.
Look,
I... Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I might be through trying to tell you anything, pal.
Don't get smarty pants with me, Dollar. I got myself a shooting to straighten out. I'll straighten it out any way I can. What else did she have in the Todd business?
You tell me.
Nothing. A small diamond ring on a little finger. It's not on the stolen property list. Tell me, Dollar, did your insurance company pay off this claim?
Yes, the whole thing. About $75,000.
$75,000?
That's right.
Well, at least you got the coat back. Even if it has got three bullet holes in it.
Maybe we'll get a line on the whole job.
If she regains consciousness. Meanwhile, you can sit here and tell me about your tip.
What?
Who put you on to Gloria Tierney?
No, I'm afraid I can't tell you that.
Why not?
Because I promised not to disclose any names.
Oh, for...
I can tell you this much, though. The man who told me about Gloria Tierney couldn't possibly have had anything to do with the Todd case. He was in prison when it happened.
Let's have his name so I can check it.
He's in Indiana now.
He's got a name in Indiana. What is it?
Sorry.
You going to sit there and tell me he gave you a name to start with and that's all you bought?
Yep.
Suppose I told you I don't believe anything. And that I think I'll hold you for a while until you forget about whatever deal you made with an ex-con.
Well, suppose I told you that a lawyer for my insurance company is on his way down here right now just to see that I get treated right. What's funny?
You. You insurance guys. You know what? You give me a pain. Right here.
We went on like that a little while. Then I accompanied Sergeant Mapes to Gloria Tierney's apartment. A full crew of technicians were there, giving the premises a complete check. Mapes dispatched two sets of detectives to cover the neighborhood for possible witnesses to the shooting. Another pair began to cover the apartment house itself. I went with Mapes to talk to the manager, Mrs. Stromberg. She looked white and shaken.
You remember Mr. Dollar?
Yes. Hello, Mr. Dollar. How's poor Gloria?
Not very good, Mrs. Stromberg. She's still unconscious.
And we're still pretty much in the dark about all this, Mrs. Stromberg.
Where is she? What hospital? I'd like to go see her. Maybe there's something I can do.
Best thing you can do is try to help us find out who shot her.
She's at the police emergency hospital right now, Mrs. Stromberg. I'll have them phone you when she can see people.
Thank you. Oh, what an awful thing. She... Well, what's it all about? Why would anyone want to shoot Gloria?
We hope we can ask her that question. Right now, we're going to try to find out all we can, and maybe you can help us.
Well, I hope so. What can I tell you?
Where she worked, how she lived, what people she knew.
Oh, dear.
Yesterday, you told me you'd known her for a year.
Yes, ever since she moved in.
All right. Was she a nice girl?
Of course she was a nice girl. Quiet, minded her own business.
Where'd she work at?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Gloria doesn't work as far as I know.
Who pays her rent?
She always gave me a check.
Who gave her a check?
Well, I really don't know.
Don't you know anything? What's the matter with you?
Well, I'm trying.
Mapes, why don't you go sit down?
All right, I'll sit down here.
Mrs. Stromberg, what can you tell us about her? Do you know where we can contact her family?
Think about it.
Well, I don't know. I know they live in California somewhere, but that's all I do know. She talked about them now and then.
Uh-huh. How about her friends here in town?
What about them?
Well, for instance, the man who drove the black Cadillac last night.
I never saw that car around here before.
Did she talk about her friends to you?
Why, no.
She's a pretty girl, young. Boyfriends?
Oh, yes, she did talk about them now and then. Do you suppose one of them had something to do with this?
Mrs. Stromberg, some guy pulled up in a black caddy last night and pumped three slugs into her. She acted funny before that, according to you. Run out when she was supposed to meet Dollar here. Don't you know if any of her friends drove a car like that?
No.
You know this, but you don't know that. What kind of a friend were you?
What?
What kind of a friend were you? That girl's lying in a hospital right now. She's got a slug here, another one here, and here. They've operated twice. You weep and holler and stand around wringing your hands about her, but you won't open your mouth about helping us find who did it. Now let's start with that car again. You've got the front apartment here. You can see the street from those two windows. Have you ever seen that black caddy here before?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you say so in the first place? Whose is it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know his full name.
Well, what do you know about him?
His name is Bill something.
Bill something.
Yes.
That's a big help. What does he look like? Where does he work? What does he do?
I don't know. I really don't know. She never introduced me to him, but she talked about him. She'd say, Bill's coming by tonight, or Bill did this, or Bill did that, but she never mentioned his last name.
But he drove the caddy.
Yes.
Now, what does he look like?
I told you, she never introduced me.
I heard that part. But I know if someone young and fresh and pretty like Gloria Tierney lived across the hall from my wife, would be at the window every time she heard the bell ring or heard a car drive up out front. She'd want to see who was buying her the candy and flowers, who was knocking on the door. Isn't that so, Mrs. Stromberg?
Yes. I mean, no. Yes.
Well, what do you mean? Now, look. For the third time, what does this guy, Bill, look like?
Well, he's tall and very dark.
Tall? What does that mean? Tall like me? Tall like Dollar? Tall like what?
Like Mr. Dollar.
How old? How'd he dress? What kind of bill?
Easy, Mapes.
Why don't you go through that offering me to sit down part now?
All right. I was wrong about you, Mapes. I admit it.
Well, maybe I was kind of wrong about you, Dollar. Hardly anybody ever admits anything these days. Okay. I'm sorry I'm raising my voice, Mrs. Stromberg. But tell us about the man. All you can remember about Bill.
Heavy? Light?
A husky fella, and he dressed very nicely, too.
What color was his hair?
Dark, I think. He always wore a hat.
How about his eyes?
I don't know.
Uh-huh. About how old would you say?
Oh, 30, maybe 35. I'm not very good at ages.
How often did he come here to see her?
Oh, once or twice a week.
Gloria's been going with him?
Yes.
Did she ever mention where he works or what he does?
No, she never mentioned that.
Do you have any idea how long she's known him? How long she's been going with him?
Well, I have no idea. I just know he's been coming to see her ever since she moved in here.
This, Bill, would you say he had money, Mrs. Stromberg?
Yes, I'd say so. He drove that big expensive car and always dressed so nice. And, of course, he gave Gloria that coat.
The mink coat?
Yes.
Oh. Do you know if he ever gave her any jewelry?
I don't know. I don't think so. Gloria'd usually run across the hall and show me when he gave her something. Mostly they were small gifts, candy, and things like that. But I don't remember if he ever gave her any jewelry.
Did he ever bring any friends here?
I don't know.
All right. Was Gloria going to marry him?
Oh, she never talked about it.
You sure about that?
Yes, she never said, and I never asked.
Why? Why not?
Well, I don't know. I never asked her. I wanted to, but I never asked her. You think right away I've been a busybody watching that girl and so on. Well, yes, I watched her from time to time, and I was her friend here. But there are some things we just didn't talk about.
There sure were.
Well, as you ask me questions, I realize how much we didn't talk about. I can't tell you where she came from or where her family is or who Bill is or what she planned for the future. I just know she was a nice, decent, honest sort of a girl.
Yes, we got that impression, Mrs. Stromberg. Anything you want to ask, Dollar?
No.
My apologies again for raising my voice. Thank you for the information, Mrs. Stromberg. Come on, Dollar.
Okay. Goodbye.
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 Well, you got it out of her.
Yeah, but I don't trust her. Took too much work.
Are you really as tough as you look?
Sure.
You're a good cop, Mapes.
Thanks. I like to have somebody mention that every 5 years. Well, better get out this guy's description.
Yeah. Now, there's a hall phone right there.
Uh-huh. Well, we sure haven't got much to go on. Communications, please. Yes, Dan Mapes. I want an APB out on... What? Oh. I'll give it to you later. Johnny, the hospital phoned in 2 minutes ago.
Gloria?
Yes. They think she's dying.
There'll be another intriguing episode in our story of the Todd Matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Here's truly Johnny Dollar. The Todd Case, Episode 2. Original air date, the 10th of January, 1956. That stars Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar. I can give more credits next week.